What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us here for a very special Tuesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You guys can hit me up over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99. Also, check out Ethos Fantasy BB. That's where all of our new podcast links, different articles, updates to our draft guide, and all of our fantasy baseball content gets posted. So check it out at ETHOS Fantasy BB. Just a couple days away from the season starting now, and we've had some news regarding a lot of cool rookies and prospects over the last couple days, some of them making camp, some of them being sent down, unfortunately. I don't know what to make of it. I know a lot of you guys don't know what to make of it, so we've brought in one of the best here in the business when it comes to prospects, when it comes to anything, really. I was able to hang out with him a little bit down in Arizona, and we're going to talk a little bit more here today. We have Mr. Eric Cross joining us. You can find his work over at FTN and at RotoBaller, and you can check him out over on Twitter at EricCross04. Eric, how you doing, my friend?
Doing well, Joe. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Like we were talking before, it's very busy time of year trying to pump out as much content as we possibly can. There's just so much news. It's very hard to keep up with it, but doing what we can. Very excited for the start of the season. You've been doing well?
Yeah, it's been a grind, man. Like we're talking about how the offseason kind of flew by. Like it feels like we were just out in Arizona, right? And that was four and a half months ago at this point. Doesn't that feel like it was, you know, over almost a half a year ago that we were out there watching games, not the Baseball HQ First Pitch conference. But man, it's fun though. I was talking with Clegg on our podcast the other day. Like, you know, I love preseason and all, like, obviously all the, you know, all the fun articles, you know, you get sleepers and rankings and all the fun stuff, you know, all your drafts, but it is kind of fun just to get into the, you know, season. You get new data to analyze. You're not analyzing last year's data or spring training data. You got new data to analyze. And yeah, it's fun. It's another 6 month grind here, but you know, we love it. So I'm ready to go.
It does feel like it was maybe just a few weeks ago or a month ago that we were down in Arizona. But yeah, beginning of November, we're talking almost half a year. It's crazy. We're doing drafts at that point, doing drafts all the way through. And we just had our first FAB period. We're really getting right ready for the season here. And there's a lot of news to go over. And like we were saying, it's tough to keep track of it all, especially when it comes to the prospects, who should be on your radar, who should be dropped from your teams. Because we've gone through a lot of drafts. There are some guys that you probably drafted like I did, Grayson Rodriguez, cough, cough, who were sent down, who you might have a lot of shares of. We're going to talk about a lot of those guys today. Why don't we start off with Grayson Rodriguez? He's a hot topic here. I drafted him everywhere. I'm a little heartbroken that he did not make the team. In hearing conversations with different people around the Orioles, they think that he'll be back up probably within a month or so. That's what I'm hoping for. Eric, are you holding Grayson Rodriguez where you drafted him? What are your thoughts on him at this point? Has your opinion changed on him at all for 2023?
Well, first off, let's not discuss about how he was my AL Rookie of the Year pick for this year. Because, you know, everyone was picking Gunner or maybe a little bit of Volpe, but I was like, yeah, I want to go a little different and went G-Rod. But, yeah, you know, I still think he's going to be back up soon. Like, anywhere I drafted him, because if you drafted him, you probably what? It was, you know, usually back end top 200 draft pick, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower, but in that general range. So I usually give those guys at least a few weeks or a month here. It obviously depends on how deep your benches are. If you got shallow benches where every one of those bench spots is very valuable for flexibility purposes, day in and day out with certain lineups, it becomes harder. But unless you're absolutely hamstrung for that extra bench spot, I'd be holding him because I am still like my thoughts on Rodriguez have not changed. Like I saw him live back in 2021 in AA, and to this day he's still the best pitching prospect I've seen in person. But I've seen Tiedemann, I've seen a lot of good names come through AA over here and out in the Arizona Fall League, and he's the best name I've seen. So I'm still thinking long term he's like potential, you know, top 15 fantasy arm. And this year, I still think the numbers will be there. Obviously, you probably only got to get maybe 120, 130 innings out of them. But I still think they're going to be pretty good innings, despite the kind of mediocre numbers in spring training. Like, go look at Eno Saris's tweets and all his stuff plus and pitching plus metrics. And Rodriguez ranked very, very high in all of that. So, obviously, the stuff is there. And I don't think the quintet of Kyle Gibson, Dean Kramer, Cole Irvin, Kyle Bradish and Tyler Wells are going to keep Rodriguez out of that rotation. So I think he's back up pretty soon. Probably give him a handful of starts, 3-4 starts, probably back up late April, early May or so, and probably good to go after that.
So let's say you haven't drafted yet. Let's say you got a draft tomorrow. I know there's a couple of main events still. You might have home league drafts. Where would you be taking them, or would you be taking them at all? Let's just say it's a 12-team standard league.
Yeah, so it was standard, but 20, what do those usually have, like 23 to 25 roster spots. So yeah, probably, you know, maybe as a you know, last round flyers, I was thinking like probably take 100 or so spots off his ADP. He was going, I think, right in the, you know, right before 200, maybe drop that to right before 300. So yeah, if you got a team you feel good on, you can afford to take a, you know, upside home run pick in that last round or two. I think he's fine in that 300 overall range.
Yeah, I'm a little sick. I took him consistently about 170 to 180 or so.
Yeah,
I know Gray Albright was from Razzball was really touting him, and I took a second look, and people like yourself were really big on him. So I drafted him all over the place, and I think you can make the argument, like, absolutely you take him with your last pick, because how many starters actually end up making a full 31, 32 starts? Most of them are going to miss a few starts anyway. Let's say Grayson misses 5 starts. He ends up with 26, 27. Is he really going to lose that much value compared to the average starter? Probably not. When you look at the stuff, obviously that Eno tweet, I think you shared it out as well. He was better than Sandy Alcantara, or as good as Sandy Alcantara in terms of the advanced stuff plus that he has, and he's better than Hunter Green, who a lot of people are big on. So I think Grayson, you might be able to buy the dip there. You're getting him 100 picks roughly later than what you were getting him before, what I was getting him before. So probably somebody that you should still be considering if you're able to get him at a discount, depending on your league. Jordan Walker is another guy who is very interesting. Obviously, he made the Cardinals. I've seen different iterations of the lineup sent out online. Some of them have him batting second. Some of them have him closer to the bottom. I saw your tweet with your prediction for him. I think it was, 26 and 10 with about a 260 average? Was that what it was?
Something like that. Yeah, 26, 27 home runs. Yeah, 10, 11, 12 steals, and yeah, I think 260-ish average, yeah.
Where are you right now? Like, let's say, same kind of general question that we had for Grayson. Where are you at? I'm assuming you've moved him up your rankings because he has made the team. Where are you drafting him right now, assuming you're still yet to draft? I've seen people picking him as high as 80, 90, even maybe a little bit higher.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, if you want Jordan Walker, it's got to be a top 100 pick, and same with, you know, not to jump ahead here, but Anthony Volpe probably would be the same thing. Like, you know, these guys were like Walker when early on in March, we started like really heating up, and some of the rumors that he could break camp were coming out. He was already jumping up into the top 200, then the top 150, and then he makes the team, and it's only skyrocketed since then. Yeah, I'm definitely all in on Jordan Walker. Like, I've seen him live out in spring training, and he just hits the ball so hard. And, you know, he was in a game out in the AFL as well. And, you know, wherever he's gone, no matter who else was on the field with him, and he played some games in spring training with the likes of Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, Tyler O'Neill, Jess Chisholm, a lot of very good ball players. And he had that confidence. Like, he knew he was one of the best players out there, regardless that he's never taken a single swing in a major league regular season game. Like, he knew he was one of the most talented players on that field, even with all those guys out there as well. And that's not a bad thing. I think it's a great thing. Like, he knows, it's not in a bad way. Like, he's not like cocky or anything like that. He's just confident in himself and in his skills that he's going to be a very good player for a very long time, and probably a stud all-star type of player for a long time. A guy that could be, you know, a top 20 draft pick someday. And I think that's going to happen, you know, we're going to start seeing that this year. Like, I've said for a long time that I think he's going to be like 90 to 95% of what Julio Rodriguez is. And I think the power is only continuing to tick up in game action here. He hasn't had the Gaudi home run totals in the minor leagues, but, you know, that those have been ticking up. I think he's on in the minors was 23 home runs per like 650 plate appearances, but the game power, like, could be 35, 40 home runs. You've seen all the exit velos he's had. He's had, you know, I think 3 over 115 in spring training, which is ridiculous. Very, you know, very quick for his size as well. So yeah, I think people are kind of like, you know, getting at me in the replies on that tweet for that 27 home runs more so than anything else, when most people were putting him in the Hall of Fame 3 weeks before that. It was kind of weird. But yeah, Walker's legit. You know, maybe there's still a bit of swing and miss to his game. So, you know, maybe I was a little high on the average. Maybe he's only 250. Maybe I was a little high on the average. But overall, I think he's gonna be a top 100 player this year. I think 25 and 10 is very, very much in play. And even hitting lower in St. Louis's lineup, like, Look, I'm looking at roster resource right now. They have him eighth. Okay, let's say that's right. Eighth is still, he's still hitting like between like Tyler O'Neill and Tommy Edman, and you know, right behind like Wilson Contreras. Like, that's still not a bad spot to be in. He's not hitting eighth for Pittsburgh. So I think it's going to be a very good season for him. And I think people that draft him even now, it's a little risky now. I don't know if I would take him top 100, even though I think he will be top 100 player. Just that's a bit risky for my liking, but I'm definitely all in on the profile.
Yeah, I'm there with you. In terms of the lineup, I think there's a few different ways St. Louis can go. I think Nootbaar could potentially lead off. Tommy Edman historically has been a leadoff guy for them. They have Brendan Donovan currently slotted in as a leadoff hitter. And who knows, if Walker does perform, we could probably see him move up that lineup. What a ridiculous lineup that this team is able to field. You could literally, I mean, Goldschmidt, Arenado, and Wilson are probably pretty solidified there, 3-4-5. But the other names, you could literally just throw them in a randomizer and you'd come up with a good lineup, however you really put them in there.
Yeah.
Something I did see that did kind of worry me a little bit, his first 18 at bats of spring, he was 9-for-18, 3 home runs, 3 doubles, no walks, 8 strikeouts. In the last 47 at bats he had in spring, 176 batting average, no home runs, 2 doubles. He did struggle after, you know, going on everybody's radar and lighting the world on fire there. And I know not to read too much into spring training. It's just, I don't know. He did like jump up like crazy there, and then he did kind of fall back to earth just a little bit. Does that worry you at all, that momentum that he will have going into the year?
Not necessarily. You know, I kind of like the ebbs and flows of a young player or rookie adjusting to the major league life. And I think it speaks wonders, speaks volumes about that St. Louis didn't like demote him. They don't seem to be that, you know, bothered by it. And, you know, if anybody saw the little video that the Cardinals posted, but when he got the, when he got told in the locker room, in the clubhouse, I'm just to say that he was making the opening day roster, like hearing what they were hearing about him and all like the adversity he's overcome, and like speaking to the man, like speaking to the human being and all those intangibles, like, he's got his head on straight. So, you know, there'll be some ebbs and flows. There'll be some ups and downs. He'll probably have a couple of weeks where he hits like 7 home runs and, you know, looks like the second coming of, you know, Nolan Arenado or something like that, or Aaron Judge. And then he'll have some weeks where, you know, maybe a 3-week stretch where he's hitting 150 with a home run over that 3-week stretch. So I'm not too worried about it in general. I think he's got his head screwed on straight. I think this is a good guy, a guy that, you know, has all the intangibles there. So I'm not too worried about that at all.
Hell, if he becomes 90% of what Julio did, then we'll be taking him in the first round next season, if that is the case.
I think it's possible.
Yeah. I have a couple of shares. I'm definitely, and I got him before the price really went crazy before, earlier in spring training, so I'm pretty happy about that. Definitely looking forward to watching him. Another guy that I'm very curious about, and I think a lot of people are, is Anthony Volpe. He went as high as 67th overall. Just looking at main events, there was 36 main events that have taken place. Somebody took him at pick 67. I think we might have gone a little crazy with the hype there. You know, I've seen some different reports of people thinking he'd bat leadoff. I, at one point, was thinking that might be the case, but it sounds like they're going to put him at the bottom of the order. What are we thinking is going to be the outcome here for Anthony Volpe? Is he turning into a bust because of how much hype he's been getting recently, you think?
Man, that's a hard draft pick to swallow right there. Like, top 70, like, I like Volpe a lot. I saw him in AA many times because the way the kind of like the new schedules are structured, you have these 6-game series and you play your own division a lot. So I saw a lot of Somerset, the Yankees AA affiliate when he was there. So I probably saw Volpe, 12, 13, 14 games across several months. And like, I knew that this guy was going to be good. Like, he had, you know, didn't have any like one standout tool, or it wasn't like, 40 home run power to hit 320, but you know, everything was just really good, right? And I think that he's going to be, again, kind of like what I was saying with Walker, I think he's going to have a really good year. Like, I would love to have him on my team, but if it's going to be top 80 draft pick costs, that kind of minimizes the potential for a positive ROI. Where, yeah, he could, but like the potential that he's like outperforming a top 80 or even top 65, whatever it was you said, a draft pick, like, that's, he could, yes, but that's a small percent chance. Like, he'd have to go like Michael Harris levels, right, to really return a positive ROI there. So that's why I would never take Walker or Volpe, you know. And if they become, you know, they put up a season like J-Rod did last year, then I missed out. It sucks. But in general, I like Volpe a lot. Like I said, I've seen him a lot in the minor leagues. very much in on the profile, you know, 15 to 20 home runs, 25 plus steals. He's hit over 50 last year. He's just running a ton. Very, very smart baseball player as well. Probably should hit for a decent average and OBP. Won't stand out in either of those two, but maybe like a 260, 270 type long-term, 340, 350 OBP, something like that. So yeah, I like Volpe a lot. I just wonder where he ends up. So I'm still kind of in on Peraza. I know it sucks. I was kind of pumping him up, as was many others. That's kind of like a, you know, late round, you know, power speed blend kind of upside pick. And obviously he didn't have a good spring and got sent down. I'm still in on Peraza, and I think he's a long-term shortstop. He's a better defensive shortstop, but has a better arm. Volpe projects more as a second baseman. So I kind of wonder how this all plays out with Gleyber Torres. Maybe there's a trade. Who knows? But in general, whether he's at short or second, Volpe's a very good player and probably be like a top 60, top 50 player for a long time.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I just think that we might have priced him out for this season and redraft.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we've absolutely we did.
Walker, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be like every single draft. Like if you're in the home league, people might not have as much need. Like, and we're talking main event here, people shooting for overalls. So they, you know, they're hoping for the upside of like a whatever 40 some odd steal season with 20 home runs. Let me just look at the last couple of days and see where he is at there. Let's take a look and see if it's any different. 121 is the ADP. I mean, that's better. At that point, I'd be more willing to take a price, but, or take a shot, I should say. But if he's going consistently in the top 100, there's like, we're very much limiting, like you said, the return on the possible investment we could get out of him. You mentioned another Yankee in Peraza. If you've drafted Peraza, is he a drop for you at this point outside of deeper leagues?
I think so, because he wasn't quite as, you know, highly drafted as G-Rod. He was already going like that 250 to 300 range more often than not. So if you had deeper benches, I could still see holding him. I think he's back up at some point, but it's just when, though. It with Volpe solidifying that kind of that shortstop position, and assuming there's no injury, obviously Donaldson could get hurt any second, so that might be what it takes. So I think outside of deeper benches, it is hard to stash a guy like Oswald Peraza right now in shallower leagues. But long term, like I'm still like in dynasty, for instance, I'd buy low if possible. So I still think that the, you know, power speed profile is there to go like, you know, 15, 25, something like that. He's one of, I think he's one of five or six players to have a 15 plus, 25 plus in both of the last two minor league seasons. Not many other prospects did that. And he did that last year in like about half a season, because he really started off slow. You know, late May, the slash line was terrible. And then he went on, I think he had like 15 home runs and 26 steals over his final 270-something plate appearances, hitting 290 before his call-up to the Yanks late September. So I think it's hard to dash him in redraft leagues, again, outside of, unless you have deeper benches. But still a believer in Peraza long-term.
Oswald Cabrera actually may, or Oswaldo Cabrera, God, I'm sure I'm not the only person who mixes those two up.
I do it all the time, man.
Yeah. He made the team, but I'm not sure about a path to consistent playing time. A lot of the projections are calling for like between 80 and 100 games. If you drafted Oswaldo Cabrera, what's your confidence on him actually being a positive fantasy asset this season?
Actually, fairly high. Like, I think Cabrera is really sneaky, man. Like, again, he doesn't have anything that stands out, but like this could be a long-term guy, that, you know, 18 to 20 home run bat, you know, hits about 250, steals just 7, 8, 9 bags. So nothing sexy, but that'll play, man. And yeah, as of right now, you're looking like you probably got, you know, LeMahieu will DH a good amount. So will Stanton, who also play right field. And you'll see DJ also around the infield as well. Hicks is back, but for how long? Like, let's be honest. Like, how long is Hicks is healthy for? So I think, well, it might not be every single day. You know, like, I'm looking at projections right now, have him, you know, 350-ish plate appearances. I'd bet a fairly high amount of money that he goes over that. I think he's more like 475 to 500 plate appearances. You know, maybe like a 15-8 type of bat this year. And if, or I should say when, Hicks goes down. Watch him stay healthy now. But like when Hicks goes down, because he always goes down, I think you see, or even like even a Donaldson injury could, even though Cabrera's not a third baseman, you know, if Donaldson goes down, then DJ comes over to third base more often than not, which moves Judge more so to DH, and then it opens up an outfield spot. So Hicks and Donaldson staying healthy is the only way that Cabrera doesn't I think, reached 400 plus plate appearances. And as we all know, both of them, or even one of them, staying healthy for an entire season is very, very low likelihood. So I think Cabrera is really sneaky, and I think he's a good value right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, like we mentioned earlier, a lot of content's geared toward NFBC, but I think if we're being honest, a lot of people who consume content are just playing in 12-team leagues, 15-team home leagues or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, a guy like Cabrera is probably not somebody who's even being drafted. Maybe with like the last pick, he's somebody where you can just put him on your bench for now, assuming that you've drafted well enough where you can afford to have somebody who might not start out as an everyday player. I think he makes for a pretty solid stash as like a last overall pick, and somebody, if you know you're not going to do that, to certainly monitor in your redraft leagues over the first couple weeks of the season. Could be, like Eric said, could be a very hot commodity come later in the season, and maybe not somebody who's like shockingly great, but even if he's giving you like 15 and 8, 15 and 10 or something like that with a decent batting average, there's definitely value there. That's pretty much what Cody Bellinger did for you last year. Brandon Pfaadt is the next guy I wanted to talk about. I heard the first time I ever heard his name, I believe, was your co-host Chris Clegg at First Pitch Arizona. I'm not somebody who focuses in on prospects. You guys have probably been on, he's probably been on your radar for a lot longer than that. But Chris was on a panel with, I believe, Nick Pollock, Michael Govier, and Jeff Zimmerman, I believe. And he brought up Brandon Pfaadt as a good target after pick 250. I was pretty surprised that he didn't make the team, considering, you know, Bumgarner was always probably going to be there. And Zach Davies, but I figured there'd be room for him as at least the fifth starter. I've drafted him quite a bit. He is somebody who is like a stash guy in my home league. We have minor league spots, a couple of them there, so I've stashed him. Do you think he'll be back up soon enough where we could just hold him, or is he somebody that you're thinking we should probably be dropping?
I think he's kind of in the similar kind of range for me as Peraza. I think it depends on the bench depth. So I do like Pfaadt a good amount, and yeah, props to Chris Clegg, is he's been on Pfaadt longer than most people that I've seen. And yeah, he talked about him at First Pitch Arizona. He wrote an article, I believe it was like in January, over on Pitcher List, an in-depth article on Brandon Pfaadt. So highly recommend you go check that out as well. And Pfaadt, like, another thing Chris just said, like, he's like, Pfaadt's the second best pitcher in the Arizona org. And I'm like, yeah, no, he really is. It's Gallen. You know, Miro Kelly had a solid year last year, sure, but you know, it's Gallen, and that's a massive drop-off. Mad Bum's a shell of himself. And how is, first up, not to get off topic here, how is Bumgarner still only 33? Doesn't he feel like he's like 39 or something like that?
He must have been like 20 when he debuted.
I think he was for a young, but man, he's
19 when he debuted.
Yeah, 33.7. So he'll be 34 in a few months, but I'm like, man, like, he feels older than 33. But yeah, it's like, and then they have like Ryan Nelson. He's, you know, fine. He's a back end guy. Same thing with Davies. It's like Gallen and then a bunch of back end guys. So with how Pfaadt pitched this spring, he had the one blow up outing. Outside of that, he was very, very good. Yeah, he was one of the best pitchers in the minor leagues last year at any level, at any age. Could miss bats at a high rate. You know, limits damage, doesn't walk too many guys either. A very good command and control guy too. So he's gonna be I'm fairly confident he's gonna be a good major league arm. It's just, when do we see him? I don't know. It's like they have a bunch of names. Like, none of them are good, but I don't know. I was hoping he'd make that team, because like, if he didn't, I'm like, all right, it's probably going to be June or so, if I had to guess, unless there's an injury or two. But I don't know. I think you'd have to have a little bit deeper benches to hold on to him. But I don't know. Maybe hold on to him for a few weeks just to see, you know, how that rotation is panning out. Because, you know, if Davies comes out and starts giving up, you know, 6-7 runs an outing, or Ryan Nelson, something like that, I think you could see them go to Pfaadt pretty quickly. And yet, once he is back up, I think he's going to be a very impactful arm.
I think he will be. I'm really hoping for it with all the shares that I have. He is definitely somebody who I've been interested in. I'm going to be holding on for now, and hopefully we'll see him by, you know, is May 1st realistic, you think?
Yeah, I think it's possible. Like I said, if one of those back end guys, you know, to start off the season really poorly, they have no reason to like stick with Ryan Nelson or like a Zach Davies or something like that. So I think you can see a kind of a switch happen with Pfaadt pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Bryce Terang made the Brewers opening day roster. That was a video that they recorded. I thought that they butchered it a little bit, the delivery, Craig Counsell, the way he said, "We're sending you down. Congratulations." After a pause, it was kind of, I don't know, I thought that could have been a little bit better executed. I don't know if you saw the video. I'm assuming you did.
I did, yeah.
What were your thoughts on that? Just a side note.
I see what they wanted to do. Like, I see what they were like, point A to point B. I see it. But this, like, the way they kind of went from point A to point B was kind of, it went a little awry. I think the delivery punchline, I think, was good, but the delivery of the punchline was, it wasn't that great. But
I think he knew they were bullshitting him. I think he knew.
I think so. I think you can kind of tell. But I love in general, like you saw, like the Jordan Walker video too. Like, I like teams doing this and posting this because these are like real moments. And you said, like, these guys have worked, you know, the last 15, 20 years, all the way up from T-ball through little league and high school and college ball to get to this moment, just to see their reaction, you know, when they hear the news that their dreams have been realized. It's such a cool moment. And it's like, outside of all the stats that we talk about and, you know, rankings and all that, just to see like that cool baseball moment that when these guys are realizing their dream, their lifelong dreams, it's really cool. I wish more teams would show that.
Yeah, we kind of, you know, it's not fair to the players. It's just kind of the nature of fantasy sports. We don't even think about the human side of it at all, really. We view them as almost like we're playing a video game and they are just, you know, non-player, non-real people. It really, honestly, this on the Brewers side of it, I was kind of reminded of it last year when Josh Hader went through all his struggles. And it's like, wow, yeah, people go through shit. And it will impact the way that they go about their lives and their careers. And that's a side note why I'm giving Josh Hader a pass for last year. But Bryce Terang, in 2022 in the minors, pretty damn impressive. 13 homers, 34 steals. He batted .286. He's going to be in the opening day lineup. He will, I think, gain second base eligibility. I think he'll be there eventually he'll gain second base eligibility. I think he'll be their platoon slash everyday kind of second baseman. What are your thoughts on Terang for 2023? Can he replicate to some degree what he did in the minors?
Yeah, I think so. I think Terang is sneaky good. Like, obviously, he's never going to be a fantasy stud that we're drafting early rounds. The power ever really gets past him, like a 10 to 15 homer bat. But he's always been a, you know, plus runner. You know, 30 steals back in 2019 in 129 games. He had 20 in 2021 in 117 games and the 34 last year. He's a smart base runner. Success rate over 80%. Love to see that. He's always had a pretty good approach, even when he wasn't hitting, you know, even when the bat wasn't quite there, you know, in 2019 and 2021, the average was a cover rate around 255, not much power. Even through those kind of struggles, he was still keeping the K rate in check, you know, under 20%. He was still walking well above 10%. And the same thing this past year, more of the same. And then you saw the power tick up a little bit. I think, you know, look at what kind of like Nico Hoerner is. I think Terang could be fairly similar long term. A guy gives you like a solid average in OBP, but you know, like a 10 to 12 home run, 20, you know, low 20s steal guy. You know, maybe not never a guy you're starting as your, you know, second baseman, but maybe a guy that you could plug into to middle infield. And I think eventually he will move up in the order, like once he gets settled in. Because I don't know if they want Willy Adames hitting second. I feel like Adames is better suited like hitting like fifth or something like that. So I think there's a potential for Terang to move up if he's able to post some, you know, solid OBP numbers. But even if not, I think this year you could see him and go like 10 and 18. I think he could flirt with 10 and 20 over a full year. He gets like 550 plus plate appearances. I think him flirting with 10 and 20 with a respectable average in OBP is not out of the question. So he's one of those guys, kind of like Oswaldo Cabrera, where it's just they're just really sneaky. They don't have the sexy profile. They don't wow. They don't jump off the page at you. But sexy doesn't always win championships. You got to get the numbers. You got to get the, you know, flexibility that, you know, guys like Cabrera offer, and Terang could have multi-position eligibility as well. So yeah, I like Terang as a, you know, kind of a late round buy this year a lot.
If he's giving you 10 and 20 with middle infield eligibility there, I'd be interested. I don't know if he's going to cut it in the most shallow leagues, but, you know, anything beyond maybe, because in a standard like 12 team Yahoo league, I did a draft yesterday. It was like 270 players get drafted. Would he make the cut there for you? Maybe at the back end of it?
Yeah, I think he's right in that back end range. I think I was kind of targeting him, you know, even before spring training started, you know, early DCs and best balls and all that. I was kind of targeting him in like the 350 to 400 range, like right in the middle of most of those drafts. So I think that with the news that he obviously is going to be in the opening day lineup, I think, yeah, he probably jumps up to that 250-ish range, given what he's capable of.
Yeah, okay. I totally agree. And I like the Nico Horner comp because Nico Horner was somebody who was very beneficial to my teams last year that wasn't expecting the power. But, you know, if he can do something like that, 10 and 20, I'll definitely take that, especially at a position like second base that has suffered a bunch of losses recently. We're going to be missing Altuve, Vaughn Grissom for who knows how long. He's a guy I actually didn't even put on the sheet, Vaughn Grissom. But just quickly, do you think Vaughn Grissom will be down for a long time, or do you think he'll be back up relatively soon?
I can't see this Orlando Arcia experiment going well, like, or even lasting long. It's funny, like, both Chris Clegg and I were pumping up Grissom a lot, and we were just like, no, he'll be the shortstop, don't worry. And then the Braves go and pull this, and it was like rumored, like, oh, Braden Shoemake, who's just terrible. You know, slightly better gloves, sure, but, like, not enough to offset the much worse bat when you compare Grissom and Shoemake. But, like, all right, maybe they go with Shoemake for some odd reason. They want a little bit better glove. Okay. We didn't agree with it, but you can kind of, you know, see it a little bit, even begrudgingly. But then they go with Orlando Arcia. Like Arcia is good. He's one of those guys that's like, all right, he's good for, you know, he'll fill in his injury. He fills in, has like a hot week or two every year. But overall, like, you know, he's a bench guy. He's like, you know, maybe at best he's a platoon bat. He's not an everyday starter, especially not one for a World Series contending team. Like if this was like Kansas City, Pittsburgh, you know, Arizona, something like that, okay. But this is the Atlanta Braves, a team that has won a World Series recently and is in the hunt for one again. So I don't see this lasting very long unless he just comes out of the gates just absolutely raking, which he's done before. We've seen a few weeks stretch of Arcia really mashing. But I think Grissom's back up soon, and I'm still very much in on Grissom. I think he's like a 2015 type of player long term. Obviously, you have to temper that a bit this year with him starting in AAA. But he's one that I would definitely – I would rather, like, if I had to pick between, like, stashing Grissom or Peraza right now, if I had both, only could stash one, I would lean towards stashing Grissom. But I do think he's back up earlier.
Yeah, I think there's more of a path for Grissom. Peraza, yeah. I feel like it's maybe a little crowded. Even if he does come up, he might not have a role, like you mentioned, with Volpe. Yep. Like Arcia and Shoemake. I mean, what are we doing here? Yeah, Grissom, I originally had him as my number 10 second baseman in my rankings. I had to move him down, obviously. I think I have him at 18 or 19. I'm still hopeful that he can come up, even if it's not over a full season. We saw over a short stretch what he did, and even what Michael Harris did coming out of that organization last year. It doesn't need to be a whole season for him to still be great. So sorry I forgot to put that one on the sheet, but I was curious about your thoughts on Vaughn Grissom there.
Yeah, I think I had him at I'm looking at my second base rankings. I had him at eight. I had him only behind Altuve. So obviously this was before Altuve's injury. I had Altuve, Semien, Albies, Jazz, Edmund, Jimenez, Glaber, and then he was like right neck and neck with Max Muncy for me. And that was like a little bit of a drop off to like India and Brendan Lowe and Cronenworth and all them. But yeah, I had him as like a top 10 second baseman as well, and had a lot of shares. And he was one that I was even saying, obviously with him going over to shortstop, like, all right, he'll get that eligibility by the end of April, even in your 20 game thresholds and NFBC formats. If you miss out on all the shortstops because there's like a huge shortstop run or something like that, you need a fallback option. I mean, you got to find a guy to plug in for a few weeks, but he was kind of like my fallback. He's like, you know, worst case scenario at shortstop, but now, and who knows? But yeah, I'd still be stashing him for sure.
Yeah, I think most leagues, he's probably a pretty common stash. If you have any kind of, you know, on Yahoo, they call it NA or any minor league spots that you guys have. I'm sure he's already added up, but he's definitely somebody I'd be looking at for those minor league stash kind of spots right now. A couple of Cincinnati Reds who did not make their team, Elly De La Cruz and Christian Encarnacion Strand. I heard Welsh, our friend Chris Welsh, talking about Strand a lot over, I forget which podcast with Welsh. It could have been a number of different pods where I heard it on, talking about Strand. And he thought, from what I remember, that he was going to make the team. He looked very good. They were using him in the regular lineups they were putting out in spring training, the quote-unquote, you know, major league opening day kind of lineups. And it was kind of a surprise, I think, to some that he was sent down. What are your thoughts on both of these guys for this season? Are they worth stashing? Do you think they'll come up sooner rather than later?
I don't know. I love both these guys. You know, with Encarnacion Strand specifically, and first off, I hate writing out that entire name. It's a long name. That's why I usually shorten it to CES in my articles. I'm just like, that's just so long to type out every single time. But I've been a big Encarnacion Strand guy for a while, even before he came over in the, was it the Molly deal or was it the Sonny Gray deal? I forget which one he came over in, but when he came over in Cincinnati, Obviously, getting that type of power bat with Great American Ballpark, I'm like, oh, this is a match made in heaven. But this really is a split camp on Encarnacion Stran. Even on my own podcast, you know, Chris Clegg, I don't think he thinks he's bad, but, you know, he's been more like, you know, more of a sell Stran right now. You know, there is, you know, some, you know, higher chase rates, higher whiff rates, which are concerns. Maybe he doesn't hit for the highest average, but he will get a BABIP boost from Great American Ballpark. The power could be 35 home runs there. Like, I think he could be like a Pete Alonso light. Everything clicks. He's like Pete Alonso light, not Pete Alonso, but, you know, a guy that could be, you know, 250 and like 30, 35 home runs, or maybe like a, you know, infield version of like Hunter Renfro or something like that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of when he's back up, I don't know. There is a fairly, you know, not really easy, but, you know, look at first base. They have Will Myers. He's had a lot of injuries over his career. You know, DH, who even knows? Ross Rizzo has Jason Vosler. I don't think so. Maybe they get Benson in there. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of, like, kind of guys that are fun, like Jake Fraley, Will Benson, Spencer Steer, but not guys that are, like, locks to perform out of the gate. So I think you see a few of these guys struggle, get injured, whatever it may be. You could see him back up. I think he's probably back up in, like, June. If I had to pick one particular month, I'd say June. And I think you could see Ellie midseason as well. Like, Ellie still has a lot to work on. Like, obviously, he has like Tatis level power speed upside, Acuna level. And he showed that last year with all the power and speed he had in the minor leagues. But there is still like the quality of his bats. While they, from what I've heard from people that have seen him live, the quality of his bats are getting slowly better. Like, he's making those incremental improvements, but still needs to like mature as a hitter. But he's one that could, if he comes out and does this again in the upper minors, probably starts in double A, gets triple A fairly quickly. And if he's on like another like 40 homer, 60 steal pace or whatever the heck it was last year, he might force their hand because, you know, Kevin Newman at shortstop or like Jose Barrera, like they won't hold back in Ellie De La Cruz. So I think he's up probably, you know, around the All-Star break. So you'll need deeper benches to stash a guy like him. But man, if you're going to, if you're going to stash a guy like that with a midseason kind of ETA guy, Ellie's the one you do it with because he could come up and go, you know, double-digit home runs and steals over the final 2 months of the season. Like, that's definitely in play here. So, yeah, that's kind of when I see both of them up.
With De La Cruz, I drafted him in, I forget if it was TGFBI or if it was one of my Fab leagues, and I'm going to have to drop him. It was a last pick or second last pick, but I just know I can't even imagine the fab that's going to be dropped on him when he does get called up. It's gonna be
crazy, like
hundreds of dollars,
especially if it's more on the earlier side of what I think, where people still have more money available to them. Like he'll go like 300, 400. You could see people drop like, you know, $600 in fab. It's going to be crazy. I'm not going to be in on that. I've never been one to like drop over half my fab on one player. I just don't believe in that for anybody, a guy like Ellie De La Cruz. But yeah, it's going to be fun to watch just as a spectator.
Yeah, I saw somebody, I forget who it was, someone posted it on Twitter. I don't even think it was the person who actually bid this, but somebody posted a fab screenshot from Volpe. I want to say 673 or something like that.
I was talking about this earlier. I was asking, like, what would put for fab on Volpe? I was like, I don't know, like, you know, maybe 400 or 500, but I don't even think that gets it done. Like, all it takes is one person in your 12 or 15 team league, one person to be, boom, $700 like that. So, yeah, that's why I've never got any of these guys because I'm not the one that is willing to spend much. But it's fun to see, like, you know, when these guys come up, like the Volpes and the Ellies, and if we get any more like that this year, like just seeing the crazy, crazy fab that gets dropped, it's always fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not somebody who has the most experience with FAB. This is my first year doing NFBC. I've done FAB in like Yahoo leagues, but it's a whole different beast when you're playing with people who are putting more money on the line than you would in your average Yahoo league, especially like in the main event qualifier that I'm in. Like, I have no idea what people are going to be throwing around for people. So it's definitely fun. You should definitely checking out Vlad Sedler's articles over at FTN for a little bit of help there with FAB, because people like myself, they definitely need a little bit of help there for sure. Let's talk about a pair of New York Mets now, Brett Beatty and Francisco Alvarez. What are your thoughts on these guys right now? How long are we going to take to see them? I know there was a lot of Mets fans who were not happy specifically about Brett Beatty not making the team in favor of having Eduardo Escobar at third. Again, same kind of questions. Are these guys worthy of stashes? Do you think they'll be up sooner rather than later? Somebody to target at the end of redrafts, perhaps?
I'd say yes on Beatty, no on Alvarez. Now, I was talking with Michael Simeone, who's a Mets fan, about this. Probably, I think it was right in the beginning of spring training, right in that late February, early March range. And he was kind of thinking that Alvarez is going to be down for, you know, a couple of months, maybe even until midseason. And I tend to agree with that because, you know, I think the goal obviously is to have Alvarez as their long-term catcher, but they did bring in Omar Narváez and already had Tomas Nieto on the team. So it's like that kind of signals, like, that's something I've been, you know, learning more and more, is to trust what these teams are kind of showing us with their moves. And that makes me think, like, all right, they're not quite ready to have him take over. Maybe the bat, they think the bat's ready, but maybe they're not quite ready to have Alvarez take over as their full-time starting catcher, you know, calling, you know, game, handling the pitching staff, all of the other stuff that go into being a catcher. So I think he'll get at least a couple months to work on that. And at the same time, while the power's legit, I've seen Alvarez, you know, a handful of times in double A, and the power's 100% legit. I think he could be like a, you know, 25, 30 homer bat at peak, but I do wonder if the average is a bit lower. OBP should be fine. He's always walked at a pretty solid clip, so he'll probably have a little more value, in OBP formats. But I wonder if he's just like a 240, 250 hitter. He's pretty aggressive, even though the K numbers have never been that bad in the minor leagues. I just wonder if that aggressiveness limits him. Did chase a bit too much. He was pretty much a pretty free swinger, but when he made contact, he really creamed it. So I think he's more mid-season, so I wouldn't. It's hard. He's a catcher too, man. That's hard to stash. Unless if he's to be up like, all right, third week of April, I could see stashing him. But he's not one I'm looking to stash. But Beatty, absolutely. I think Beatty's back up soon. Beatty has just gotten just consistently better and better. Always been a great hitter. Every time I've seen him, the dude is just hitting line drives all over the field. Sort of tapping into that game, the raw power a bit more in games and elevating the ball. He's kind of a guy that would hit a lot of line drives into the gap and sort of elevating the ball more. Some of those doubles sort of clearing the fence. And I think he's going to be a really good, you know, top 10 third baseman for a long time. Maybe never like a top five guy. I don't think I'll ever get into like that Nolan Arenado, Machado, Devers range or like Austin Riley range. But like that next tier where he's like, you know, back in top 100 player, you know, hitting 270, 25 home runs, you know, maybe flirting with 100 RBIs annually in the middle of that Mets lineup. So I think he is back up soon. I think they want to get that bat into the lineup. And he could play, you know, obviously third base, a little bit of outfield as well. That could help get his bat into the lineup a little bit sooner. So I do think he's back up soon. So I would be stashing Beatty.
Trying to think of like a comp based on that stat line you gave there for Beatty. Who's the first one that like comes to mind in terms of already like a major league third baseman or any player really?
I don't know. It's hard. Like maybe
like Matt Chapman with a better average.
Yeah. Chapman with better average. Maybe no, Justin Turner doesn't really fit fully. It's hard. Maybe like, Arenado with a bit less power. Yeah. You take off like, you know, 5, 6, 7 home runs off Arenado, but yeah, maybe Justin Turner back when Turner was at peak, maybe a little less average, but something like that. But a guy that's going to be, you know, never going to stand out, never going to be a guy that's like the core part of your team that you draft, but a guy that is a solid top 10. I think you can settle in. I think like Jose Miranda will get into that range as well. Maybe we see like Josh Young in that range. Maybe keep Ryan Hayes. You know, Alec Bohm could if he hits more for more power. But I think that second tier of third baseman, I think that's where he settles in.
I'll be looking to see if I can add him up in a couple of leagues. I don't think it'll be too long necessarily. I'm hoping for, with all these guys that we've talked about, I'm hoping generally best case scenario is by May 1st, we won't have to be waiting any longer and they'll hopefully most of them will be up at that point. Probably not Alvarez and probably not the guy that I'm going to mention here. You mentioned already with catchers, how it can be very tricky to stash them, but Andy Rodriguez. Now, I'm not sure Austin Hedges is the guy they want to be going with long-term, but I'm also really not sure about how quickly they're going to bring up Rodriguez. He only played 6 games at AAA. He's played 31 games at AA. He's gone up the ranks pretty quickly. What are your thoughts on Rodriguez for this season?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that obviously he's been mashing everywhere he's gone, but Pittsburgh in general just hasn't been an organization that has really pushed a lot of their prospects for the most part. So it was kind of odd to see him get pushed the way he did. But at the same time, it just doesn't sound like he's going to be up soon. You know, I was hoping for it, but this feels more like a midseason call up, June, July, something along those lines for the second half of the season, which means, again, as a catcher, it's so hard. Like, only guys that are looking to stash midseason, you know, or hold until midseason and waste that bench spot on for 2-3 months are guys like Elliott, guys that can be super incredibly high impact guys. And while I do like Endy a lot, I think there's going to be a good average there. I think it's going to be, you know, maybe a 20 homer bat as well. He's just not the type of guy in general that I'm looking to hold on for a couple months. So I think it'd be good if you're struggling at catcher. You know, a lot of us are. You know, catchers just, you know, for the most part, a barren wasteland, even though there's better recently. But if you're struggling and kind of patchworking together your catcher spot when he's about to come up, I'd be okay trying to get him an infab to see if there's anything there, but not one I'd be looking to hold and stash right now.
Catcher is certainly better than it has been in recent years. I mentioned this on the show recently, but in a two catcher, like 15 team league, it's still not good. Guys that you're rostering as your C2, unless you know, there's some people who will double tap Real Muto and Varsho or whatever, and then you're all right, whatever. But for the most part, you're looking at your C2 as like a, you know, Austin Nola, Christian Vasquez, you know, guys who are not ideal. So, you know, I've taken Rodriguez in, I think, two DCs, hoping for later on in the season I'll be able to get some magic out of him there, hopefully. Yeah. Last guy I have on the list here, Yuri Perez. Pretty highly touted guy. I mean, looking at his numbers, I can see it for sure. You know, 34% strikeout rate. He looked pretty good in AA, but, you know, the results were all right. He had an above 4 ERA. The indicators were about 3.5 on the FIP and the XFIP. I don't personally see it as much as some other people see it, but I'm not the biggest prospect guy. What are your thoughts on Yuri Perez? Do we see him in the big leagues this year?
I think we do see him this year. I just don't think it's that early. Like Miami, I think it would take a couple injuries to see Yuri in that rotation, because there's already, you know, 6 or 7 guys ahead of him that are all pretty good arms. Like, especially if Rodgers bounces back, which I think he will. He kind of falls into that Josh Hader thing we talked about earlier with the human side of it, where he had a lot going on personally with his family as well. So, and he looked pretty good this spring. I love Edward Cabrera. Braxton Garrett didn't look great this spring, but I think he's still ahead of Yuri on the depth chart at least. And maybe even another name I'm forgetting right now off the top of my head. But I just don't see them rushing him. They've kind of, yeah, they did push him initially, but then once you get to AA, they've kind of been slow cooking him. Since then, I hate using that term, but it fits. Sure. So I think we'll probably see him. You know, again, if I had to pick a month, I'm probably saying like August, maybe July. But with pitching prospects, it's hard. Like I kind of ball them up in the same kind of grouping as catchers in terms of like stashing, where it's hard to stash a pitching prospect until, or any really, any non-Ellie De La Cruz level prospect for that long, unless you have super deep benches. So I guess he's one that could make a huge impact. Obviously, he's one of the better pitching prospects in the game. Top five for me. Only ones ahead of him for me are Grayson Rodriguez, Ricky Tiedemann. I still have Painter ahead, even though it's he's dropped down a little bit because of the injury. But and then you could I have Yuri, or some have him at 2 or 3. Even I'm probably one of the lower people around on him on Yuri actually. But long term, I think it's gonna be a very, very impactful arm. But I just don't see like that big impact coming this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a prospect person. I just don't really see it without having dug in that much. Like he's like ahead of a guy like Fott for you. You think he's going to be that much better than Fott?
Long-term, he's ahead of Fott for me, but for this year, I think Fott will have the bigger impact just because frankly, I think Fott's, you know, making 8 to 10 more starts this year than Yuri, maybe even more. I think Fott, you know, if I had to put the over under on Fott making, you know, 23, 24 starts and Yuri probably like, you know, 12, 13, maybe. So, yeah, I think Fott maybe even doubles him in innings this year. So, for this year, absolutely, it's Brandon Fott. Long term, I do like Yuri a little bit more.
Well, okay, very interesting. I will need to dig in a little bit more. Like I constantly try to remind people, I am definitely not a prospect person, but that's why we bring on somebody like you, Eric. We got a couple of questions. I put out a thread earlier. I just got to go through the notifications here because I don't know, got a few questions here for you, Eric. Let's just get to it. Let's see what the first question is here. So, short stash and keep. Grayson Fott or Hunter Brown, who would be your number one stash out of those three guys? I think for me, it's probably Hunter Brown. I think he's going to be the one. Well, let's see what you have to say. I think I might be leaning Hunter Brown because I think he's going to be up right from the get-go and maybe have the most volume. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I do think volume this year is going to go to Hunter Brown. Like, he was dealing with a little bit of injury through a bullpen the other day, but so maybe he, you know, they delay him a little bit. Maybe he doesn't start to like second week of the season or something like that. But I do think he is going to be, you know, pitching the most innings this year, probably by 20 to 30. Like, I think, you know, I think Brown gets into the 140, 150 inning pitch range. G-Rod probably like 120 ish. And then Fott maybe 110, 120 as well. So yeah, if I had to pick one of those three, I like all three arms. Like, they're all three very good arms. But for this year, you know, it would have been G-Rod. I would have taken G-Rod over Brown in general, but I do think Brown's back up, you know, in the rotation sooner. So I will go Brown here.
Did Brown get sent down? Did I miss that?
No, he hasn't been sent down, but you know, he threw a bullpen session the other day. It sounds like he might just be slightly delayed to start the season. Okay. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm reading too much into this, but
okay.
But no, he has not been sent down. At least not unless I missed it. I might have.
God, I hope not. With Grayson, those three guys are a lot of scares. If they're all three in the minors, I'm going to be a very sad man. Right. Next question we got is about Churio. Do we see Churio this season, or is he more of a 2024 guy? I was also curious about the Diamondbacks pitching prospects, which we touched on, and also about the Braves, I guess, with Dodd and Schuster.
With Churio, I think there's a chance, especially if Milwaukee's contending end of the year, which I think they will be. I think I have them as a playoff team actually this year, one of the wild cards. So I could see it, but then again, there's so many outfielders ahead of him on the depth chart. Like, they already have, obviously Christian Yelich is out there, and you know, Garrett Mitchell will be starting out.
Taylor.
Who else? Oh, Brian Anderson as well. I think Winker could play a little bit of outfield. Oh yeah, Tyrone Taylor's in the mix as well. And then Sal Frelick and Joey Weimer too. So there's a lot of bodies out there already that are, you know, pretty good players. Like, I think Frelick and Weimer are very good. So if, you know, there's an injury or two, or if Weimer or Frelick don't work out, I think you could see him. Like, if he's doing what he did last year again, you know, in double A, maybe gets a triple A mid season, I think he could see it, but if anything, it's a September call-up, I think. So I don't see much of a fantasy impact this year. I think 2024 is the year for him.
And the second part of that was the young guys who are making the Atlanta rotation here, Dodd and Schuster. I guess, generally, are you interested in them for this season? What are your thoughts about them for 2023 and beyond, I guess, as well?
I think outside of super deep leagues, I'm not in on Dodd. I think he's only obviously in that rotation because they needed a couple guys to start the season, because, you know, Kyle Wright's going to be delayed. But Schuster is a little interesting. You know, I don't think he's much more than like a, you know, number four major league starter long term, but he's shown some potential in the minor leagues. So I think he could be, again, I don't know if like 12 team Yahoo leagues, maybe fringe there, but anything deeper than that, I think he's worth a shot, because especially, you know, obviously, you know, I hate to like, you know, go to the wins side of it, but if you play in a league with wins, you know, Schuster could be a guy that gets you some wins on the Atlanta Braves team this year. So I do think he's a decent. If I had to choose one, I would choose Schuster. I don't see Dodd outside of deeper, you know, super deep leagues. I wouldn't be going after Dodd.
Yeah, I think I would agree there based on what I've seen. I like Schuster. I think that he can be pretty good, and who knows with Atlanta. Right. Speaking of Atlanta, the last question we got here is regarding this year's Spencer Strider, and our friend Britton Allen is asking, could it be Gavin Stone? Is that in the realistic possibility, realistic outcome for him this season?
No.
maybe I shouldn't have phrased it realistic. Is that the upside?
Well, it's I hate to say that to anybody, because Strider has had like the, you know, maybe the best rookie pitching performance, you know, in decades. You know, obviously was the least amount of innings ever to reach 200 strikeouts, beating Chris Sale by like 15 to 20 innings or something like that. So it's just hard to say the next Spencer Strider. That's why I kind of shy away from writing articles like the next Spencer Strider, the next, you know, on the prospect side, the next Jackson Churio, because those are such low percent outcomes that it's hard to say. But in general, I love Stone, you know, so let's get that out of the way. I love Gavin Stone. I think he could be a breakout arm, a very impactful arm long term, and that could be this year, because Dodgers, obviously, they don't have Walker Buehler back. You know, Ryan Pepiot's there, but he's shown a lot of command and control inconsistencies throughout his professional career, especially at the major league level. So I could see them, you know, if he's walking, you know, everybody and anybody in the first few innings of the year, Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone are right there knocking on the door. You know, they're both very good arms that I, you know, have ranked very similarly. So if I had to, you know, pick one, I go back and forth on this every day. I think Miller might be a little bit safer, maybe Stone a little more upside, but both are very good arms. So yeah, if given the chance, I think you could see a nice breakout. As you know, I'd be a little bit hesitant to say, you know, Spencer Strider levels though.
Yeah, I don't know if you can really say that with anybody. I think Brandon Pfaadt was the guy we were talking about earlier. Not you and I, but just in general, the industry was kind of hoping for that from him. Maybe we could see that, but it's not really fair to put that on anybody to be the right next Spencer Strider. I still can't believe he didn't win Rookie of the Year. I know Harris was amazing, and maybe that's because I had a couple bucks on Strider, but I was shocked after what we saw from him. I guess Harris is the more flashy guy people see every single day, but I was very surprised by that. Eric, I really appreciate you hopping on, man. It's been great catching up. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me on. It's this hour flew by. A lot of fun names. Like I said, there's a lot of good young talent at the major league. Guys that we've already seen debut over the last few years, a lot more up this year, and that's one of the really fun parts of the game. So it's always a pleasure talking with you.
I appreciate that, man. You as well. Why don't you remind everybody before we let you go where you can be found and what it is you got going on?
Yeah, got a lot going on, obviously, writing over at FTN Fantasy, over at RotoBaller, two very great sites. Can't recommend their premium packages that each site have enough. I definitely go sign up for those. I got myself over on my Patreon as well, which is patreon.com/toolshedfantasy. That's where all my rankings will lie. I'll be doing monthly prospect and dynasty for average and OBP rankings every month, and I'll be doing daily content, you know, some pitching streamer recommendations, some waiver wire targets, you know, prospects, recaps, a lot of stuff like that. So a lot of fun stuff there. And of course, the Toolshed podcast with Chris Clegg, doing two episodes a week on Monday and Thursday. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff.
Tons of content. Eric is an absolute must follow over on Twitter at EricCross04. If you're not listening to the Toolshed, you absolutely should be. Even if you don't play Dynasty, you can get little tidbits like we got today about certain players who might be impactful for redraft as well. So Eric definitely should be somebody who is on your radar. Like I said, EricCross04. You can find me on Twitter at JoeOrico99. And of course, you can find these podcasts and all of our fantasy baseball work at EthosFantasyBB. Go give us a follow over there and check out all the great work our writers have put together this offseason. That's just going to keep rolling into the regular season as well. If you're somebody who doesn't like to use Twitter, which I can't blame you at this point, you can go right to the website at sportsethos.com. You hover over the MLB tab and you get all the same content over there without the nonsense of trying to figure out what feed to be following for you or whatever it is at this point. But guys, appreciate you hanging out. Make sure you're subscribing to the pod, letting us know what you think if you're listening somewhere that allows ratings and reviews. And of course, we will see you again tomorrow. Guys, take care. Have a great night and cheers.